Right, so now we are, I think it's all working. So we've got a Google Hangout up as well, if people want to come on and ask questions. If you just want to watch, you can watch from my YouTube channel, I think. So today's quote is about mindfulness of breathing. When the Buddha praised mindfulness of breathing time and time again, it's considered to be the gold standard in meditation practices in Buddhism. And so there's a lot written about it, there's a lot of debate about it, discussion about it. People have their own ideas about it. Lots and lots of different ideas about it. Some of which include the fact that it has to be done at the nose. I've had a monk tell me, I explained to him that I do mindfulness of breathing, watching the stomach, or I do a meditation watching the stomach rising and falling. And he looked very serious and concerned. And he said, through a translator actually, it was kind of interesting, he told his translator to tell him that he has to be careful with that because it's not the Buddha's teaching. And it had to be at the nose. In Thailand, they've got lots of interesting ideas about mindfulness of breathing. They mix it with mindfulness of the Buddha usually. So when the breath goes in, they say Bud. When it goes out, they say Dho. Buddho, Buddho. And as a result, they start to get the idea that the breath or the awareness of the breath is somehow the Buddha, in the sense of Buddha meaning one who knows. So if you read some of these books, they talk about that being Buddha, that is Buddha, that knowing mind. Somehow that's equivalent to Nibbana or something. It's ridiculous. But the Buddha had specific teachings on anapanasati. Some people say it's only used for jhana. Other people say that you can use it for vipassana. Some people say Buddhaghosa apparently said that it's he kind of insinuates that it's only for the Buddha and highly special individuals, that it's very difficult to practice anapanasati. He may be right, it may be quite difficult to become. His argument is that it becomes more and more refined as you practice it. But he was talking about a specific type of anapanasati that's used to enter into the jhanas. And yeah, the idea that eventually through anapanasati you start to see a light, and that's the nimitta that you use to enter the jhanas. Which is kind of interesting, because the breath being the breath being based on ultimate reality, if you focus on the reality of, say, the stomach or the feeling here, you can't enter into jhana, obviously, because it's impermanent suffering and non-self. It's not something stable that you can absorb in. So there has to be some conceptual object like the breath or something that you would focus on. But the Buddha had, there's one passage that's really interesting, not this quote actually. There's a much better quote. This one is sort of practical, explaining how to teach different ways, and there's lots of different ways you can watch the breath, noticing it's long, noticing it's short, which is actually a part of how we do. When you watch the stomach, noticing that it's long and noticing that it's short is a part of seeing both the reality of the experience, being impermanent, suffering, and non-self, and also the reality of your mind recognizing this is long, recognizing this is short, because something is only long and short, relatively speaking, so it's only the mind that decides. And that, so that's an experience that arises in the mind. So seeing all of that is a part of Vipassana practice. But there's, you know, calming the mind using breath, there's seeing impermanence using the breath, anicca anupassi viharati, contemplating release or being released by focusing on the breath. There's lots of different aspects. But the quote that I wanted to bring up was where the Buddha talks, he praises Anapanasati, so we can get an idea of what he thought of it. He says, Santo Jeva Panito Cha. It is both peaceful, Santa, right? Santo. It's peaceful and Panita, Panito Cha, which means subtle. Santo Jeva Panitocha. So it's clearly something that calms the mind down. That's, you know, even in Vipassana we talk about how it's not really designed to calm you down, but you can definitely see that having the object of the stomach to come back to is calming, it's reassuring, it's a base, you know, because when you're dealing with the craziness of the mind, having the stomach to go back to is having the breath to go back to. I mean, the breath is always there, something you can rely on, and it's something that can become very peaceful. Santo, it's very subtle. It's subtle, it can get subtle. I mean, that's more to do with samatha, where you focus on the subtle sensations at the nose or whatever. Asejanako, this is an interesting one, and this is Asejanaka means mixed, so Asejanaka means unmixed, unadulterated, somehow it might be translated. But it's interesting to use this word to rebut people, especially people, you know, meditators from the Thai tradition who seem to think you can mix Buddha and mindfulness of the Buddha and mindfulness of the breath. I would argue that this word could be used against that, along with the experiences that come from mixing them as well. But, you know, I shouldn't be too critical, to each their own. But if you talk to monks in Sri Lanka and tell them that that's what they're doing in Thailand, they just shake their heads. Where did they get that idea? Mixing two meditations like that. Asejanaka means it's unmixed. So the breath is breath, it's pure, right? There's no baggage associated with it. I mean, for most people. And when you focus on it, it's such a pure object. There's no bias in the sense of it being useful for some people and not useful for others, it being only useful for this type of person. Asejanaka, it's unadulterated. There's no baggage associated with it for most people. Asejanako. Sukho ca viharo, it's a dwelling in happiness. So again, much more to do with the tranquility side of mindfulness of breath, where you're focusing on the concept of the breath going in and going out. It becomes very calming. But no matter what, whether it's vipassana or samatha, focusing on the breath is both peaceful and pleasant, happy. Now, in Vipassana, the problem comes that you eventually have to deal with when it's unpleasant. You have to deal with the tension in the stomach, or you have to deal with the fact that it's not under your control. It can be quite uncomfortable. But by focusing on it, by using it, and by being objective, which it helps you to become objective because it's such an objective object, happiness comes regardless of the discomfort. So it's important to separate happiness and comfort, happiness and pleasure. Sukho ca viharo doesn't have to mean it's pleasant, but it's peaceful and Maybe you want to say it's almost pleasant, but it's pleasant through unpleasantness. It's important to understand because Vipassana meditation can be quite unpleasant. People think they're doing it wrong or that the meditation is wrong because they see impermanence, changing, chaotic. They see suffering, and it's unpleasant, it's unsatisfying, it's unamenable to your wishes. It's unsatisfying, I guess, for lack of a better word. And it's uncontrollable, so you can't force the breath, and you find yourself trying to force it and suffering more as a result. So if you see that, you might get discouraged and think, this isn't happy. But there's such happiness that comes when you learn to be objective about it. It brings happiness. But I think mostly this is referring to how calming it is in the beginning. If you focus on the concept of the breath, it can be quite calming and pleasant. But the most important aspect is the final characteristics. We got santo jeva panito cha sukho javi asejanako cha sukho javiharo. I think there's another one that I'm forgetting, but the final one is upanupane akusale papake akusale dhamme. Whatever evil dhammas, papake, akusale, unwholesome evil dhammas have arisen. Antaradhapeti upasameti. Mindfulness of breathing destroys them, basically. It causes them to go away, causes them to cease, to be tranquilized, neutralized. It really forces you. I mean, this is much more on the Vipassana side. It really forces you to give up because you can't control it. You can't control the breath. It forces you to let go. And it helps you to let go because it gives you something pure. There's no greed attached to it. There's no anger attached to it. So it gives you something pure to focus on and let all your all your anger and all your greed just pour out. Like this is like water washing it off. I think the Buddha likens it to rain. Rain, actually. Just like in the hot season when it rains, it's cool and refreshing. And it also washes away all your defilement. This is not to be underestimated, because you think that it's rising palm. That's just a simple exercise. You can become enlightened just watching your stomach rise and fall. You see all three characteristics very clearly. It's impermanent, suffering, and non-self. It's all right there. And we're forced to let go of defilements. You know, any defilement you have for anything in the world, it will show up. It's as though you have it's a cloth, and you're wiping your hands, and all the stains show up on the cloth, and it wipes away all the stains. So, anyway. Some little speech in praise of Anapanasati, which is very, it's very possible to, very reasonable to suggest that what we practice is a form of Anapanasati. It's also, you can also describe it as mindfulness of the aggregates or the elements, because it's that as well. Okay, so I've got a whole posse here. Hey guys. Some people joined the hangout. Do any of you guys have mics?
I can hear you.
Hey, Larry.
Hey. This is my first visit.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you.
I've just started trying to get people to join the hangout, so I figure if people really want to ask, if they're willing to come on here, it means they really need to ask their question badly. So we'll separate the wheat from the chaff this way. If you're just idly typing it in, it's a sign that you don't really need an answer. I mean, the problem is lots of questions and repeat questions more. So, and this is more real, you know, right? This is actually, we're now a community of four of us. We're a sangha, you could say. And I've got two guys sitting here in my room listening. So anybody got any questions? Or are you just here to say hi?
I'm just here to say hi and kind of get acquainted with the process. I guess I was thinking that this might be just a Dhamma talk, okay, and not a question and answer opportunity, so I'm not prepared.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, I haven't announced that or anything. I just gave like 10 minutes, so that's our short Dhamma talk for the day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, and we can stop there. But, we can talk for a few minutes anyway. You guys are live on the internet, in case you didn't realize it. So we've got 23 viewers. And talk.
I have a question, Bhante.
Go for it.
Is it important not to move while you're meditating with a seated meditation?
It's important to learn while you're meditating. I mean, it's important that we understand what we're doing, because we're not trying to get into some ecstatic state or trance state. In Vipassana, we're trying to learn about our minds and about our bodies. So there's not so many shoulds and shouldn'ts, musts and must nots. You just have to ask yourself logically, you know, what happens when I, for example, when I move. So if you're moving without being mindful, then it's a moment of delusion, you know, or it's a moment of, you know, following your habits. Moreover, the question is, why are you moving, right? So the cause of your moving is potentially a problem. So we move because we're uncomfortable. Well, uncomfortable means disliking. Disliking means anger. Anger is one of the defilements. So acting on it is problematic. It's cultivating the habit of aversion. Something bad happens, you find a way to escape it. That's a big reason why we move. Another reason why we move is we get tired and maybe lazy, and so we start to slouch. And so again, you might want to address that if you're tired or so on, to say to yourself, tired.
I do well.
But that being said, it can be that the pain is just too intense and you have no choice, you're going to move. So I guess the two parts. You note whatever it is that making you want to move. You say disliking or tired.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do move, that's not the answer. The short answer to the question: no, it's not wrong. I mean, we don't really have wrong and right. It's, you know, it's best if you can be free from the need to, you know, to move. If you can free yourself from the aversion to the pain. But there's no intrinsic reason why moving should be wrong, because you can be mindful of it. So absolutely, when you need to move, when you feel like, okay, enough, I have to back off, or it's just too intense, absolutely, move. But the technique, the proper technique, would be to say to yourself, wanting to move, just a couple of times, noting the intention. Sometimes you do that and then you don't have to move, but probably you still want to move. Lift your hand up. If it's there, so you're moving your foot, you say lifting, moving, and you grab the leg, grabbing or holding or touching, so then lifting, moving, lowering, releasing, and so on. So just being mindful. That's fine.
That's helpful.
Who's this guy in the middle? 90 sim. What does 90 sim?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Oh,
yeah. Who are you?
So I'm Simon.
Oh, hi, Simon. Okay.
Hey, nice to meet you, bud.
Nice to meet you. You don't have a webcam, I guess.
No, I'm sorry. I just got the mic for now.
Did you record today's Second Life talk?
Yep, we recorded it at Hollow Hill because I kind of messed up the time, so I wasn't there for the last session. So we just listened just 10 minutes after it finished there. I just kind of messed up the time, so...
I see. So you didn't record the video?
Yeah, I made a video, but it was not recorded at the deer park. It was recorded at another place where we just sat down and did meditation and listened to.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
At Dark's place, actually. I don't know if you've been there.
No.
Okay.
No, I haven't been on Second Life much. I was thinking...
Yep.
You all have places on Second Life, so there's no point. But at one point, we had set up an open sim. If you know open sim, you can set up your own Second Life for free. You just need a server.
Ah. So that's also an open and public space as well. Where we were today.
With open sim, you have it on your own server. You can have up to. You guys can go ahead. You guys go meditate. You don't need to listen to this. This is more general stuff. Oh, goodness. And you can have as many people on at once as you like. You can have as many shapes and stuff as you like. It's all free. It tends to be less laggy, depending on your server, than Second Life, because Second Life is... Or it used to be. Second Life used to be pretty problematic. You can do a lot more, and it's... And the thing is, it would be just our group. You wouldn't have... I mean, that's good and bad, but the good side is it would just be for this group. It'd be a way to get everybody kind of in the same room together, sitting down. It's fake, but...
Virtual.
There's potential for good there, I think. It was very interesting listening to the talk today, definitely.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
Second Life, I'm not clear. I've never participated in any of those kinds of applications or activities, so I'm really ignorant of what it's all about. I'm getting the impression, but I am curious, I'm getting the impression that perhaps it's kind of a way to give the virtual Sangha opportunity to have some more interface or activity outside of the meditation Sir Mangalo site.
Yeah, I mean, it's a place, what people will say good about it is it's a chance to meet other people, meet other Buddhists, talk with them, meditate with them, encourage each other. People really like it. It's 'cause it's kind of like a game, I think. It's got its good and its bad. The bad is it's kind of like a game. So it's easy to get caught up in it. It's been good the past couple of weeks. I've had really good audiences, 20-some people, which is, for Second Life, it's pretty good.
Does it encompass Dhamma talks, teaching, or is it kind of a peer-to-peer sharing kind of thing?
It's virtual reality, so you actually see cartoon, cartoon characters of each other sitting in a room, sitting in a deer park. If you look on YouTube, you can see I've recorded. If you Google me, Yuta Dhammo Second Life, you'll probably find my videos. that I did in Second Life. Lots of good talks back in the day.
They're very good.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, I guess I shouldn't be saying they were good, but I think they were, you know. I was really keen on it at the time and doing and preparing for them and stuff.
Monte, I listen to those probably more than anything else. Huh. And I listen to them repeatedly.
Wow.
They're really good talks.
That's good to hear.
I have another question. I have registered for a teacher meet at this week, early one morning. I think perhaps Friday there was an available slot, and this will be my first occasion. So is it pretty much just earbuds, audio visual, like hang out right now?
It's very much like what you're doing right now.
Okay.
You have to call me is the only difference.
Sure.
So you can do that using my Gmail address. You can also, on the meditation site, on the page where you signed up for it, if you're there at the right time, a little button will show up, and that should do it for you. But if you can't do it that way, you can go to hangouts.google.com, and there's a link to that as well, I think, on the page, right? And let's see. Yeah, there you can. There's links to Google Hangouts. Go there and find me.
Okay.
Using my Gmail address, if you yutadamo@gmail.
Right. And I presume that it's particularly an opportunity. I've been meditating on my own down here in South Mississippi, pretty well isolated from Buddhism, for about 3 years, and reading and YouTube videos, watched a lot of your videos, read a number of authors, so, and just kind of groping my way through the process. So this will be my first opportunity to actually tell somebody who understands, you know, what I'm up to, and ask, how can I do it better? What should I do differently? You know, I'm open to criticism, etc.
Well, what a lot of people don't realize who've, you know, gotten involved or read my booklet or whatever, is that there's more than just the first step. Like, what you read in my booklet or in my videos is the first day of a meditation course. It gets a lot more involved in that, and there's a lot more exercises to give you, but can't really do that just by putting them out on the internet, because people will, you know, there's a potential to go too far, too fast on your own, that kind of thing. I mean, probably not, but we don't really do it, you know. It's just following tradition. You have to get the exercises from me, so that's what these are for. You have to meditate at least an hour a day to be considered for it. Otherwise, I won't talk to you. I'll say, go back next week. And then I'll give you, you know, I'd talk to you if, and then I give you a new exercise. If you have questions, you ask them. If I have questions, I'll ask them. Just to make sure you're on track, give you the new exercise.
Sure.
And so we go through what would be the equivalent of like 90% of a foundation course if you were coming to stay here and doing like many hours a day. And so you'll do like 1 hour a day to start, and with the expectation that you should have the expectation that you're eventually getting up to 2 hours a day. So that's what you should be preparing for. Start at 1 hour, get up to 2 hours. That's sort of, I've just made that up on my own, but that seems reasonable. And then we meet once a week, as you can see, and you do in 1 week what you would be doing in a day. As a result, it takes about, well, 15, 18 weeks to finish that course. And then to actually finish the foundation course, you'd still have to come here. Like right now, there's one man who did that, finished the online course, Patrick. and now he's come here for 10 days, and he'll finish within 10 days the foundation course.
Okay, so it is, I wasn't clear on that, so I appreciate it. There's the expectation that I would make arrangements for a weekly call-in.
Yes.
Good, okay, good deal.
Yeah, once you've got the slot, it's yours every week until we finish the process or until you decide you don't want to do it anymore, then you take yourself off the list.
Okay. Now, my life schedule can vary a little bit with sometimes having grandbaby responsibilities, things like that. So I didn't realize that I was needing to commit to that particular time slot each week. Is that
you can
alterable?
Change it. Yeah, you can change it as you like. I mean, you still want to give yourself a week of practice in between meetings, but yeah, you can change
sure.
it. As long as there's a slot open, just take a new slot.
Okay.
Or
okay.
if you can't
Good.
Make it
Thank
and there's
you.
No slot, just send me an email and we can work something out.
Okay.
Potentially.
Okay. Super. Thanks for all that information. Great.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. Yeah.
Anybody else? Otherwise, I'm going to head off.
Good night.
Okay. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you. Good night.